We have a ton to discuss this week. We're a week away from Apple's March 25th, it's Showtime event, and it seems that Apple is using every day this week and partly last week to clear the way for any announcements that people might expect next week and would be disappointed if it weren't happening next week when they reveal their video service and magazine service. So we'll get to all that, starting with last week's announcement. Shortly after, I think it was one day after we recorded the podcast with Mark Mayo, you know, kind of wondering out loud, when will WWDC be announced? You know, how did it relate to last year's spring event? And I think it was the next day where Apple announced WWDC will be happening in San Jose at the same location. Was it June 4th start date?
3rd.
June 3rd start date.
3rd to 7th.
I would have missed it. So Monday through Friday, that first day, the June 3rd, was when you expect to see the big keynote where all the new versions of software are unveiled and everything we expect there. So, and I looked back too at like, when does press get invited if we were to be invited to attend and as press? And I think the answer for last year was May 22nd. So a long way out from that. But for developers wanting to apply for the lottery, the chance to buy a ticket for, what is it, $15.99, that process was like last week through today. So that's already closed. And so we're recording on Wednesday. So by the time this is out, it's too late if you wanted to apply.
Yeah, people will be getting their, you know, you've won email. Or better next time. Or
indeed,
whatever.
Yeah.
And the artwork for this year is, they've kind of gone like, dark again. Last year was really white and airy. This year it's black backgrounds, and they it's all neon, so they're featuring like an emoji with their heads exploding of all these iOS controls and logos and stuff, because the slogan's like write code, blow minds.
Yeah.
And you have like this and they have like more than one, so they've got like the monkey and the skull and then
robot,
two others,
I think. Yeah
robot. And I think it's cool. Like the neon look is cool, and I prefer it to last year where they kind of like fake tease an iOS redesign with all those like super realistic 3D, you know, like glass.
I mean, the art was really cool last year. It just didn't, you know, it set the expectations for that you'd see depth in iOS that didn't come.
Yeah, and everyone kind of, we obviously knew that this was unrelated to the operating system.
The artists involved in making this aren't connected, and like they're not assigned here. Here's what we're doing. Turn that into visuals. They just like make something cool.
Even so, it still kind of felt like this is not the greatest timing to show this kind of radically different design when, you know, iOS 12 is more about performance and stability than new features, for instance. Yeah. So it definitely didn't gel up right. I prefer the neon approach that they've done.
And with
around.
Rumors of dark mode, people could at least try and connect the dots here. You know, that hey, they're using a dark theme. We expect dark mode in iOS 13, so, you know, have at it. We discussed a few things last week about what we expect to see at WWDC 2019. And, you know, as we get closer to June, we'll have much more on that to talk about. But for this week, let's discuss all the new things that Apple's announced so far. So Monday through Wednesday, we've had announcements about new iPads, new iMacs, and new AirPods. Anything beyond that, we don't know about yet, so we'll see. But let's break it down, starting with the thing I think that we're most excited about, new AirPods. The way that I saw this was, it was early in the morning, so, you know, you were kind of online more than I was so far. And for the iPad announcement, there was a Tim Cook tweet with, like, no text around it. It was just a picture over Tim Cook's shoulder of him using the Apple Pencil to draw on an iPad Mini to say, like, look, now the iPad Mini works with a pencil. It must be new. And
they'd preempted it by actually taking the store down. So the store was down for like 4 hours before. So yeah, we were ready to expect something. The announcements for in the following days for iMac and AirPods, they did not take the store down. Yeah. So there's kind of a difference there.
And then for the AirPods announcement today, it was that he had written hello like on the screen, the classic, like, you know, Mac hello style. And for the AirPods, it was the same picture, but Tim Cook at the same angle with an AirPod in visual, you know, you could see it in his ear. And he had, you know, apparently drawn a picture of AirPods with the little charging light on the case. And that's how I saw it, because I wasn't online yet to see, like, if there were, like, the story had changed or if there was like a news release for it. It was just like I have alerts on my phone for Tim Cook tweets. And so I got a Tim Cook tweet alert. And I was like, oh, nice, cool. So, you know, without knowing anything else about it, it was like today is AirPods Day, at least, if nothing else. So
yeah, well, what was funny from my perspective is these announcements have been happening at the same time every single day. So I was refreshing the store and watching out for something. But based on some rumors and stuff that we'd seen from different websites, people were expecting the iPod Touch to be updated today. So yeah, I was predominantly refreshing the iPod Touch web store page. And I was like, nothing's changing. And suddenly Tim Cook tweets. I'm like, oh, wow, they're doing AirPods today. Okay, so change gears. Yeah, so it was pretty funny.
Yeah. So there's now the official name is the new AirPods. And then if you're referring to old AirPods, they're the first generation AirPods. So it's not super ideal in the way that we talk about
them. In the tech, like in the specs at the bottom where they talk about their testing for battery life and stuff, they do refer to it as AirPods second generation, actually. So.
Okay, so there's AirPods second gen and AirPods first gen. And I think like loosely it'll be okay to just say AirPods 1 and 2. Like wasn't the iPad mini 4 like not always called that? And then they went back later and called it that? Or, you know, it's somewhere along the way.
iPad mini 4 was always called iPad mini 4.
Oh, okay. Maybe it was 2, iPad mini 2. At some point they went back and like assigned a number to something that didn't have a number.
I don't think it was the mini, but I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, I'm thinking mini. I think, cause, and I know at a point there was iPad mini 2 and iPad mini 4, and there was.
Oh,
three.
Maybe it was iPad mini with the Retina display originally.
Yeah, I think so. And then they called it 2.
Yeah, and then they retroactively changed it. Yeah, I think you're right.
So I feel like it's okay to be fast and loose with the naming on this, like as a customer, because Apple could always change it in the future. And they always, like, they lowercase to the S and 4S, you know, to it used to be 4 capital S, and then they did lowercase S for 5, and then, you know, so they like retroactively changed the casing on the 4S name. So it will be okay, I think, if we call these AirPods 2 and AirPods 1 or however you want to refer to them. But now, if you're a new customer buying AirPods, which you can finally do today, I'm happy with that. You've got three choices. You can buy from the top, you can buy AirPods 2 with a wireless charging case for $200, which is more expensive than before, where you spent $160 on AirPods for like the whole thing. For the same $160 price, you can buy the new AirPods with the classic charging case, so only wired, no wireless charging. Or if you buy the new AirPods without the wireless charging case, but then you change your mind in the future, or if you have old AirPods, or you just need a wireless charging, or you just need like a replacement case, you can spend $80 to have the wireless case now. And before that was only sold through AppleCare as a
For $69.
Yeah, so you spend $70, $10 less, and you got the replacement case. But you couldn't like walk into an Apple store and buy it. And it kind of fits like when they did the AirPower preview like 5 years ago, and they showed you know, optional wireless charging case, and they did the AirPower mat like even on the AirPods page until today. It was always like described as like an optional wireless charging case, and it still kind of fits, like, because you can buy it bundled, or you can buy it separately, or you can buy it bundled, or you can buy it bundled, which we can buy it separately, or you can buy it AirPods without the wireless charging case. So it's still very much
optional. I do wonder if they hadn't promised they were going to sell it separately, if they just wouldn't have bothered, because clearly the timelines here are all changed from their original plans, you know, this is probably coming out in like March, way ahead of any AirPods refresh.
Yeah, so the idea probably in 2017 September with the iPhone 8 and 10 event was that AirPods 1 were still pretty fresh in the market, and that there was no need to refresh them for any reason. Like the future AirPods weren't even ready probably, but for AirPower coming out, there'd be also, you know, you'd want to use the case for it. So like you'd sell the case alone, and then you'd decide, do you want to buy the case now for your old AirPods, or do you want it for, you know, version 2 to come out? Yeah, so I can get on board with that thinking. The case, we do have some new answers to like questions that we've had since September 2017. The case is Qi compatible, just like the iPhone is, unlike the watch, where the watch has to only work with, you know, maybe AirPower in the future, but at least Apple's magnetic charging puck, where it's like shaped the right way. With AirPower, with the new AirPods wireless charging case, you can put it on any Qi mat, just like you can do the iPhone, including the back of Samsung's new phones. So that's a bonus. I've got a lot of wireless charging pads like already. So, if AirPower never happened, I could just like repurpose an iPhone charging mat for the AirPods.
Yeah. And this obviously ties into the full rumors where Apple's going to do bi-directional charging on their new iPhone as well. So you can charge your AirPods on the back of the iPhone 11.
Yeah, so that's by way of Ming-Chi Kuo, who says the next iPhone, you know, call it the iPhone 11 or whatever, that they'll have charging both ways. Instead of just wireless charging the phone, you can wirelessly charge other things. And we kind of guess maybe they limit it just to AirPods, but you know, because it's a little bit challenging to do a phone unless like you're plugged in on one phone and then charging the other one wirelessly. But you know, we'll see how that goes. But yeah, they'll catch up with Samsung eventually there, presumably this fall. And Kuo also nailed the fact that it has the new AirPods charging case, the one that's wireless at least, has a new hinge style. So visually it looks different just on the hinge alone. You know, we were the first to see, like 2 years ago from the iOS 11 GM leak, where we received a tip to us and we could look through the iOS 11, final version before it was out and dig up things. That there was this new style of AirPods charging case with a green dot on the front of it. And it was like, what is that for? Oh, probably wireless charging so that you can charge, you know, see the status of, are you charging or are you charged now? And that was before it would even got like sneak peeked previewed, you know, for AirPower. And now it's finally here, like all this time later.
Yeah, it's definitely a long time.
Yeah.
A long time in the running.
Yeah.
But Kuo definitely got this like spot on, because his kind of summary for the AirPods release was, better Bluetooth connectivity, which we'll talk about in a second. Mm-hmm. The new hinge design, which will increase the price of the case because it requires like reinforcement, internal reinforcement, and the wireless charging capability. And that is a pretty decent summary of this entire update, really.
Yeah, and the hinge isn't like, you know, like, oh, that's way better. like one of the early complaints for us on AirPods that I still suffer from sometimes today is like, put them in backwards in the case. It's like, you know, USB A, where like it's always wrong the first time. I still haven't mastered that, you know. The hinge is like, I haven't seen the back of the case, but I guess there's no metal exposed, maybe. Like that's the reason they redesigned it, so that there isn't like metal on a wireless charging mat. But
yeah, I think the not the most recent Kuo report, but the one before where they originally mentioned the hinge, he said it was required because of like heat reasons, as if the first case wasn't. The hinge on the first case would like warp some or something if it was charged like that. So, okay. Yeah. So I think you still actually see the metal on the back.
Okay, maybe so.
Yeah.
And then was the metal one of your early complaints too, by the way? Like, I know when we did the AirPods review episode a while ago.
Yeah, I think I probably said it'd be nicer if the metal wasn't visible on the back, because it would be prettier if it was just a seamless like plastic.
Yeah. So I think now it doesn't look different. It doesn't look better. It looks different.
Like, yeah. I think those complaints about the about the kind of like metal in plastic C has kind of been superseded by just the fact that the AirPods get really dirty. So when you know, when the white gets dirty, the fact that there's a bit of metal on the back doesn't really play into it as much.
Like, yeah.
It doesn't, that has definitely gone down in my list of issues.
That was a week one complaint, and so it's been shed on the list of other things. These do require, these new AirPods will require iOS 12.2, which isn't out yet, macOS 10.14.4, or watchOS 5.2. None of these are out yet, but presumably that's probably just for the Hey Siri feature, and not for like just what AirPods have done before today. And it's because,
yeah, I bet it still pairs to previous operating systems, and it will just maybe that you don't get the. Obviously, you won't get the new image asset. Like, it would just show as old AirPods, essentially, and you won't be able to set up Hey Siri. But otherwise,
it would exclude the original Apple Watch, because that can't run watchOS 5. Anything. And so, if you couldn't use these new AirPods with the first Apple Watch, which, like, you could kind of see, but also, like, for me, the watch and AirPods is, like, the perfect marriage, and, like, everything else is just a convenience. But, like, there's no headphone jack on the watch, and so you've got to use Bluetooth headphones. And there's none on, you know, new iPhones and iPads either. But you can use Lightning headphones if you wanted to. You can't do it on the watch. You've got to have Bluetooth. And the watch has just always been great with AirPods, you know.
And Apple's AirPower promise was Series 3 and later. So that at least stays consistent there, because they never promised the AirPower mat would charge previous watches.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah. So this week we got the 6th beta version of iOS 12.2 and all the other releases. That's probably the last beta version we'll see, because it'll probably be released on Monday after the event. And that's kind of been our guess for a while. It's like, here's the new service update. Go sign up for it. TV service you can do. Maybe you can add channels to the TV app now. And in the fall, there'll be the video service. And there was a in the AirPods press release today, there was an image that showed like iOS 12.2 with the new news icon, and there was no new TV app icon. So, you know, that's probably saying the same way. And I think that just says the news app has more than the TV app has so far. And then the TV app, you know, maybe like it'll be an update to iOS 12, or maybe it'll be part of iOS 13 for when the TV service launches with the original content. You know, we'll know more of that in just a few days. You can also engrave your case for the AirPods for the first time, which is, I think, practical. They added this for the Apple Pencil too. Like, you couldn't do it for the first one, but because the new one had a flat side, it was easier to do. Just like you can do on iPods and I think iPads, you can now engrave the AirPod charging case. It's on the front where the light is, which is, I don't know if I like that or not, if I'd rather be in the back, but it's there. What's practical here is, like, if you're in a household with multiple AirPods, it can be hard to distinguish them, and you might, like, put a sticker or something on it like that. And I've used that technique, not for mine, but, like, for the other AirPods in the house.
I've never engraved anything of Apple's offerings ever.
Yeah.
But out of everything that they do let you engrave, I feel like the AirPods is something that I'm the closest to doing, even though I haven't done it. But, like, because especially if you're in, you know, you're buying them for a, you know, your spouse or someone in your family. It's a cool gift to be able to unlock it and have your name on it, especially if other people in the family already have their own. So it kind of stays unique.
It's free laser engraving. It's no additional cost. And I didn't do it this time. I did have my Apple Pencil 2 engraved to be personalized, just like, you know, add value to it for me. But for the AirPods, I was afraid that, you know, I want these on day one, which I think for a lot of people was like March 26th or 27th. We'll see how it goes, but I wouldn't want to do engraving and then not have these as soon as I could. Even if in the long term, like, the engraving would last longer than like the value of like day one arrival. But I did see like our friend Kyle Seth Gray opted for engraving and then had the same ship times as everyone else. For me, part of it is that I if they're in Apple stores sooner than like they ship to customers, which has happened in the past, then I would just buy the ones in stores. And it always affects like resale value. You know, if you plan on selling your old AirPods in the future, these new ones.
Or even if you just want to give them away, it feels like a bit awkward to give away one that says Zach on it to someone else, for instance.
Yeah. So free case engraving now. Let's talk a bit about what's new about the actual AirPods, because it's a little bit confusing. I mean, at first I thought that they were still selling the old AirPods for $160 and then the new AirPods for $200, but it's the case that they're selling new AirPods in the old case effectively for $160 and then new AirPods in the new case for $200. As rumored, you get Hey Siri support, which if you recall at the iPhone event last year, everyone thought that intro video was like showing this. Maybe it was, I don't know, but we'll be able to do that now. And I think Mark had first reported that. Mark Gurman first reported that, and then Guy Rambeau found it in code. Like, even found like the image that Apple's using on their website to show like how you set it up. It's like pixel for pixel accurate because of the way he simulated the image. That now we'll be able to talk to. And I remember when the rumor first surfaced too. It was like I was kind of surprised by it because we talked a bit about like what do we want from the AirPods, and I just hadn't thought about that, because if your watch is near you, if you have one, or your phone's near you, you can do the Siri feature that way. But if it's in your pocket or your watch is like not wrist raised, then it's not going to hear you. And so on a run or just like any situation where you want to control Siri, but you might not have the thing that can hear the Siri command on you with the voice command, then, you know, having it built into the AirPods is pretty smart. And so, you know, it's here. Let's see. So they also changed – we were curious about this and we looked on the website. It seems like they changed what the double tap gesture is, because you could always double tap the AirPods to activate Siri. But I don't know about you. I don't love the double tap gesture. Like, it's kind of flaky because you've got to tap like a certain part of the AirPods for it to receive the tap.
Yeah, I don't like it either. Like, because you're essentially pushing the bud further into your like ear canal, so it feels awkward, right? Like, you don't really want to do it.
It's like it's less of a tap because of like the way that you can hear it, and more like a thud. It's like thud thud. But they after launching the original AirPods, they added through software the ability to remap what that does, so you could change it from Siri on both AirPods to play, pause, forward track, or reverse track. And I've always done, since you could do that, play, pause on the left AirPod and then forward track on the right AirPod. And it seems that that might be the new default, and that Siri is saying, hey, Siri, and that the gestures are now mapped to play, pause on one and forward track on another, you know, maybe even like I've got it arranged. So that's neat. I think it's a good idea because it also encourages you like to go and customize it to what you want instead of just having Siri be everything. And in terms of specs, there's a new chip inside. So the original AirPods had the W1 chip, which, you know, I guess doesn't really stand for anything, maybe wireless one. And that was kind of described as like the secret sauce to how the AirPods connect so well and are better than other Bluetooth headphones in many ways. And then there was a W2 chip in the Apple Watch, right?
Like, yeah, and W3 in the latest watch.
And W3. So we've had W1 and AirPods, W2 and watches, and W3 and watches.
And the W2 is in the Beats Studios, the new Beats Studio 3s.
Okay. And W1 is in.
No, W2 is. W2 when they added the noise cancellation, yeah. Studios have W2. The other Beats products have W1.
Okay.
Not that it really matters, because these are all just branding names rather than any relation to.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean it's the same version, like the same chip necessarily.
The difference between the W1 chip in the AirPods and the W2 chip in the Apple Watch is like ginormous, because in the watch it handles like cellular. Like, yeah, there's a massive chasm of actual features compared to what they call them.
Yeah,
which they've decided to rebrand it again.
Yeah, which might influence their new rebranding, which is H1, which I read is like header one. Just because, like writing on the web, or you can look at it and it's like I see the word hi, but H1 and did they say it stands for headphones? Like it's meant for headphones.
They do say it is developed specifically for headphones. That's the quote in the press release.
Okay, so you can assume H means headphones in that case. And this powers basically like the new features in AirPods, including Hey Siri, but also you get 30% lower gaming latency. And so I think that was like an early test and criticism of AirPods, like that they're low latency but not perfect, and so you can have the video that you're watching not align with the stream to the AirPods because it's got to be very fast. And so now there will be 30% lower gaming latency. So you can, you know, video is one thing, but like games are even another beast, I guess. So we'll see how that goes. 2x faster switching between active devices. So this has been a complaint of yours, is that moving between your iPhone and iPad can be comically slow.
Yeah.
You tap it, you see it, you tap it, and you see a spinner for a while.
Sometimes it works instantly. Other times, the spinner could probably do 10 rotations before it finishes. Like, I don't really know. I haven't found a rhyme or reason to why sometimes it's instant and why sometimes it's slow. I've found a rough pattern where if you're playing music on the iPad and then also play music on the phone and try to swap over, it seems to take longer than if you were paused on the first device in the first place. Mm. I've no clue why that would be the case. I feel like this is kind of like a realm of bugs, and if it was working properly, then you know the 10-second delays are just not, it shouldn't happen at all.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it isn't like that 10 will go to 5 for you. It's that it should never be longer than what, like, the best case scenario, and now the best case scenario will be even better probably.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that those massive delays don't happen, but I wouldn't necessarily bet against
because
it.
I don't know if other people have these delays,
but I wonder if it's like some weirdness with beta life stuff. So I never really want to like hammer on it too hard, because I always wonder if like my iPad's on the build before the iPhone and stuff, like is that confusing it? So I never really want to like categorically say that they switch slowly, but I'm pretty sure other people have the same thing, maybe not as frequently, but it does happen to other people.
Yeah, and then finally they say it's 1.5x faster connection time for phone calls. So if you use phone calls, AirPods for phone calls, if you experienced delay before, it might be 1.5 times better this time, faster. For talk time, they also call out battery life improvements. So I think before you got 2 hours of active talk time. So you're on the phone using AirPods as your speaker. That's audio in and out. So it's pretty, you know, use a lot of battery. And now you get 3 hours, so one more hour. But the listening time in general is still 5 hours, so that's unchanged from old AirPods. Although, if you're like me and you've listened to AirPods every single day since launch, and the 5 hours has diminished to 2.5 hours, maybe 2 hours, then 5 hours, again, is a great way to reset your battery life from scratch.
Yeah. But the case itself is still rated for the same 24-hour charge.
Yeah. And there was no improvement. I think 15 minutes of charge gives you 3 hours battery life of the five. Yeah. There was no improvement to how fast they charge, which is one of the later rumors from like some questionable sources, was that AirPods, the new ones, will charge super fast. Like that might just be – this might just be like
Spear the first – sourcing.
Yeah, the first test of that source to say that was no good.
The latency stat's quite funny, because if you look at the specs, they measure it by how long it takes from the jumping in Doodle Jump to here in your AirPods compared to the newer model. That's, you know, in the specs where there was like, we played 356 random songs. For the latency test, they specifically call out they were playing Doodle Jump on pre-production units.
I would get it more if they were like, what's the popular game that everyone plays? That the FaceTime bug kid was playing.
Fortnite?
Yeah, if he said Fortnite, I'd be like, oh, yeah, using like a popular game. But like Doodle Jump is not new. And I don't know how popular it is, but it is a game.
Yeah, Doodle Jump is more of a classic.
Right, yeah, yeah. And the things, you know, more things we didn't get super fast charging, is the same as before, which isn't bad, but it's different. There's no matte finish to these, like the Apple Pencil style, the Apple Pencil 2 style. And there's no black option at all. So, okay. There's no way to tell from the actual buds that we've seen yet that you've got the new AirPods. It's just the case, if you even get that case, plus the experience of using AirPods, which I think contributes to not having a new name for these. Like, even in the model number, it's not like AirPods 2.0. It's like 1 something, you know, instead of, you know, just to say like this is a revision to AirPods, not like a whole new version of AirPods, really. And if you love AirPods and you've worn your old ones out, like it's a great upgrade. But if like, you know, you've got AirPods and you love them, I'm not sure that this is like, go out and buy these if you're using AirPods and don't have complaints today. And it helps too that you can buy the wireless charging case on its own. But there is something to look forward to. So like, you know, if these are boring to you, because, you know, for one of the upgrade reasons doesn't apply to you, Ming-Chi Kuo has already said, expect a redesign in 2020. So that means that this year we're getting new AirPods. Sometime next year we might also get new AirPods that look different in some way.
And they might exist – they might, like, coexist with these ones, because maybe they're more expensive, sport-orientated. So they might have, like, tips or wingtips or something, and they'll – you know, just have both models as like, do you want this one or do you want the one that is slightly bigger and fitting but also has better noise cancellation and water resistance?
Yeah, I mean feature-wise, Mark Gurman at Bloomberg has already reported that to expect water resistance and noise cancellation. I think his first report said like as early as 2019, and he thinks that based on the timing now that maybe that could be 2020 for those. And so we have this run for a while. And if you've been waiting for new AirPods, maybe these are the ones to buy. And then the next ones might make different decisions, and those might not even be something that you'd want. It might be way more pricier, or you know, or maybe they're also going to be hit, and you know, you just upgrade and sell these when you get new ones.
Yeah, because especially with the noise cancellation thing, there is limits of physics to how well you do noise cancellation, and the current bud form factor of how small they are and how they don't like cover the whole ear. And I feel like the noise cancellation is never going to be great on them, so. To me, it kind of implies they're going to be more sporty, kind of like how, you know, the Bose SoundSport ones look. Like, maybe that's the higher-end AirPods option in 2020, for instance.
Yeah, I have to wonder for noise cancellation, like, water resistance, they'll figure it out. But noise cancellation, like, maybe if it'll be heavily software-based and that it will, like, pick up the audio around you. I don't know how it would work, though. But I mean, like, even over-the-ear headphones sound one way without noise cancellation and then another way with noise cancellation on. And it uses way more battery life to use noise cancellation than without. And so for AirPods, the challenge isn't only physics, but also battery life. Like if it's some active noise cancellation, through software, then, you know, you wouldn't want to say you get 5 hours regular and 2 hours with noise cancellation, because I don't think it's that important to anybody.
Yeah.
You know, you
make if noise cancellation is what you're looking for, buy different headphones.
Yeah. 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 So we have that to look forward to. On the question of if we're upgrading, like I've been ready for the AirPods mostly because my day one AirPods are wearing out from use. And it's like, part of it is like, it's too bad that these things are so degradable and like you can't, you know, you can pay Apple to replace individual AirPods, but it's nearly the cost of buying the same exact AirPods again.
Yeah.
You know, so it's I don't think this is a very good avenue to take. So for me, I will absolutely buy these new AirPods. I've ordered them. I've pre-ordered them. Because my old batteries are shot, and I still use AirPods, like, if not daily, multiple times a week. You know, they go with me, like my keys go with me, like my wallet goes with me. So I'm definitely buying these, and there's no question about it. What about you, Mayo?
I have an order placed. I may cancel it. If the AirPower Mat comes out, there's no way I'm canceling it.
Which one did you order, by the way? I've ordered the ones with wireless charging case, of course.
Yeah. I ordered the wireless charger ones. I feel like, I don't know, I we'll talk about it in a second, but there is actually, it kind of feels bad paying the extra $40 just for the charging case, but yeah. If you're going to do it, you know, you might as well do it. Because it also feels bad paying $79 just for the case on its own. So I was like, you know, you got to go with the whole hog. If the Air Power Mat doesn't come out Thursday or Friday, I may cancel it. My brother has been waiting for second generation AirPods for like the entire of 2018 because of the promise of the case. I told him, I was like, no, don't worry, the wireless charging ones are coming soon. And of course, we know what happened there. It took like a year and a half. So it's not like I won't be able to see them and, you know, give them like a quick test run.
Yeah.
Which kind of limits the need to actually own them for real. I'll probably keep them, I'll be honest. I probably am going to keep them, but if the AirPower Mat comes out or they announce it, there's no way I'm doing it. And if the Mat comes out in June, I'll just buy a pair then. Like, because for me, the stuff, like my batteries, my current AirPods are definitely degrading, but they're not to the point of like dire straits. I need new ones, you know, right this moment.
Like, so what I do is every time I do a half hour workout or like listen to, like use them for a little while, I charge them in the case and I charge the case on the wall because like I know it's getting worse and worse. So I'm just like always charging AirPods. And you're not that way yet, I guess.
Yeah, like they've definitely got shorter, but I don't feel, I'm not like on the brink of having to buy a replacement, if that makes sense. And the Hello Siri integration is nice, but on its own, I wouldn't pay, you know, I wouldn't buy the whole AirPods again just for that.
Yeah.
So, like, I think it's a perfectly fine update. It's, you know, obviously it's iterative, but really the wireless charging aspect of it is, you know, what I'm like beelining for, especially in the light of the AirPower Mat probably coming out at some point in the next few months.
Yeah. The one concern I have about the Hey Siri feature is that maybe it'll be annoying and that I won't have it turned on. And I'm curious if you have to have, well, I'll say this. I use the feature for HomePod because it's the best way to interact with HomePod, like, you know, hands-free. You know, you can go over there and hold the top of it, or you can like do things to the phone with AirPlay. But that is like the main thing. And I have it turned off on the iPad and the iPhone and the iMac because I don't. I don't want those picking up instead of the HomePod at home. And then if I'm out and about where there's no HomePod to interfere, I do have it on the watch, of course, because the watch, you've got the choice of like wrist up, wrist down. If the screen's off, it doesn't respond. And if I'm out and about, then like that's kind of what I use. Or the iPhone's probably in my hand if I'm not at home, and so I can just squeeze it and, you know, activate Siri. I am concerned though, like if I'm at home and I want to talk to Siri on the AirPods, is it, you know, relaying to the iPhone and then it's trying to decide, like, is it intelligent about HomePod or AirPods? Like, if AirPods, those should be the priority because you're wearing them. But then there could also be situations where you want to do something on the HomePod, I guess. You know,
whilst you've got them in your ear, I feel like that's quite niche.
Yeah, that would be niche because, like, you could, even if it was like HomeKit commands, you could use the AirPods for that. So AirPods should always dominate, like, if the voice command.
Yeah, because the problem with like the HomePod taking over when you don't want it is the HomePod can't do
so
everything
much
you want with Siri, right?
Right.
So that's the primary holdup, is if you're talking to the Air and then you want to do, you know, search the web or something that the HomePod simply can't do, you get annoyed when that takes precedence. But A, your AirPods are in your ear, which is a pretty good signal. That's what you're, you know, actively doing. And they'll talk to your iPhone, which, you know, has every possible Siri feature in part of it. So you're not going to hit the case of, oh, I've said this, but the device I'm talking to can't actually handle it. So yeah, it's definitely I don't think that'd be much of an issue.
Yeah, yeah. So that should be pretty good, as long as it isn't like you've got AirPods in and the HomePod takes over. Like if you gotta like change the volume or something, and then the HomePod takes it, or if it's like you try to use the AirPods for it and the HomePod further away mistakes what you said when the AirPods could have done well. So probably it's that the AirPods will be at the top of the list, and then, you know, they do the thing where it's like based on location, like what's close to you. We'll see how that goes.
What do you think about Apple kind of going to the, you know, two-tier $159, $199 pricing now?
It's definitely way more complicated now. Like if you're going to buy AirPods, like you've got to pick, you got to know. And it kind of follows a pattern of like the iPad line this week is way complicated, you know, probably in a good way. But you've got to make a decision now, whereas before it was, do you want AirPods or not? And now it's, do you want AirPods? Okay, which ones? And how do you, you know, want to receive them? And that will only complicate inventory, you know, which has already been an issue for all of AirPods' existence. I think it's too bad that the $159 AirPods don't include wireless in the case, because that would obviously be way more elegant. Is that for $159, it's the new AirPods, and new AirPods come with a wireless charging case. Like that, yeah. It feels like that should be the case. Even if it was that AirPod, I know people would be mad. Like people are already mad that it costs $200 now. Like after tax for me, it was like $212 and change. Which is expensive for AirPods. It's just that I do like them that much, and I'm making money back on the old ones. But yeah, I mean, it would be way more elegant if you could just, you know, you go buy the new AirPods, you get wireless charging, even if you never use it or never think you're going to use it, because you've got to make a decision, and it's too bad. It just makes it complicated. But if they feel that they need to make the price $200 now, then it is a good thing that you can still buy AirPods for the old price point, get the new benefits of the AirPods features, but not have the new case if that's not a feature that you care about. It doesn't feel like a $40 difference, though, between the two. But also, you know, I've been saying for a while on this show that because AirPods sold for $160 have been hard to keep in stock, like you can't make as many as you could sell, then there's no need for Apple to price them any lower.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be beneficial. Like if you sold them for $100, like then the problem for inventory would be just way worse.
Yeah, and Apple would just make less money.
Right. Then they'd make less money and have fewer to sell. So that wasn't realistic all along. The other thing is that AirPods, even though they're expensive for earbuds, you know, kind of what they are, their convenience is kind of what makes them, you know, worth the premium cost there. There have long been competing wireless headphones that cost more and do less, like have worse battery life, have a worse design. You know, they're clunkier to use. The charging method is, you know, micro USB, for example, and there's classic Bluetooth. So even at $200 for like the best version of the new AirPods in terms of like the case and the AirPods themselves, that's kind of even with what others have been selling for, like the Bose versions. I think they're at that price too. You know, and like Apple was selling the Power Beats 3 headphones for $180. You know, I think those go down a lot on sales because Apple's more, with the Beats brand, they do sales a lot. But, it was always kind of like AirPods are really kind of nicer than Power Beats 3 are. Like Power Beats 3 are old and clunky. Like even with a W1 chip, you know, they're not better than AirPods. So, price wise, it was kind of a weird thing. So, you know, it doesn't feel great spending over $200 with tax on the new guys, but, my brother-in-law has AirPods and he lost the charging case or washed it or something and needed to replace it. But he, didn't like the idea of spending $69 on just the charging case through AppleCare to replace it. And just kind of just patiently waiting for another alternative to that. And so I said, you know, we had this conversation last night of like, have you replaced it yet? No, I don't want to spend the $70. Then today, I said, new AirPods. And then he didn't say anything back. And then I said, I'll sell you my old case for $40. And he said, deal. And then what I'll do with the left and right AirPods are sell those individually on eBay as left replacement AirPod, right replacement AirPod separately. And I think I'll probably in total get around $120 for the whole thing and end up spending, you know, only about $80 out of pocket for the new guys. So, which is not bad considering I've used them every day and gotten great value out of them. So.
Yeah, that is the crux of the matter, is that they still, like even the 2 years old AirPods represent great value. Like they were a Smash Christmas item and, you know, were, we talked about this before, they were relatively old by that time even, yeah. But they still feel incredibly new. And you can look at the competition from other manufacturers, and only just like last month did Samsung release truly wireless earbuds that are remotely comparable, and they're and cheaper, because like pretty much everybody else, they do wireless earbuds that are worse and more expensive. So mm-hmm. it didn't feel like, you know, Apple was doing you one over really at the 159 level.
And Samsung didn't match battery life either, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the Samsung case is more bulky, so it's not a perfect comparison, but they are, you know, the closest, they're the closest that anyone's come, and they're like $20 cheaper. So they're not even like $99, they're $139, right? So it's not, you know, it's not miles apart. So the AirPods clearly do represent good value. I agree that it would be nicer if they could have just made it more elegant and be like, you know, $159, the wireless charging case is here, be on your way. Because there was even some confusion when we did like our stories that people thought the $159 was the existing AirPods and they were just still being sold.
I did, before, you know, I read the details, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because that's kind of what it, at the high level, it looks like the Apple TV situation where they just carry on selling the old Apple TV for the same price and then add the 4K version on top. Like, but no, the $159 AirPods are the H1, you know, model that you just don't, the only difference is the case. I think what's going to happen here is they are kind of instating these two tiers now of like AirPods and AirPods Pro, and 2020 rolls around and the $199 level is going to be the one that has the noise cancelling and the water resistance. Mm. And then the $159 will just be the current AirPods we know now with the wireless charging case.
That'd be like, cool. Yeah.
That's kind of where I see this going. Like, they're getting ahead of themselves so people don't freak out as much when, you know, $200 really is the only new AirPods there are, if that makes sense. Because right now, if you just look at raw pricing, it kind of feels like you're getting you're getting hard done by, because the $40 difference only adds the wireless charging case. But if you look at like the AppleCare cost of buying the standard case, that's $69, and then buying the wireless charging case is $79. So, you know, you're paying $40 for a $10 difference at retail of the actual case alone.
Yeah.
So, you know, Apple's certainly getting a good deal out of you, at least for upgrading. But, you know, what can you do? If you want to buy the new ones, I feel like you should just go all out and get the wireless ones as well, because you'll probably end up regretting it, even if you are, you know, kind of sort of losing out on $30 of value at the same time.
Yeah. And we don't know the replacement cost. Well, I guess it would just be like if you needed to replace your wireless charging case now separately, Apple would just say, buy the new one. Like, it wouldn't be before, like, where there's a price associated with it through AppleCare. It would just be you go buy the new one. So that's a thing. One thing that comes to mind is that, you know, assuming you get AirPower in the future, that's an expensive picture. Like, you're looking at, you know, I guess the cheapest like new stuff would be, like a $749 iPhone XR. What is the Apple Watch around $400 new? And then $200 AirPods, and then whatever the price of the AirPower mat itself is. So it's a very pricey picture. For convenience, you know, but it is what it is. So. This week, 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Upstart. Applying for a loan is a lot like applying for a job that you don't get to interview for. Instead, loan companies make their decisions based off your credit score and history without getting to know the whole you. Now, thanks to Upstart.com, it never has to be that way again. Upstart is revolutionizing the way you borrow money by rewarding you for your job experience and education in the form of a smarter interest rate. When you're young and just starting out on your own for the first time, or even if you've just never established a credit history before, it can feel daunting to overcome that. I've been there in college. That's where Upstart can help. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score. Unlike traditional credit underwriting, which could be biased against people with a short credit history, Upstart goes beyond the traditional FICO score when assessing your credit worthiness. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate in less than 2 minutes without affecting your credit score. The best part? Once your loan is approved, the funds will be transferred to you the very next business day. The next day. Over 100,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards, student loans, fund their wedding, or even just make a large purchase. So don't wait. Free yourself from the burden of high interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. Hurry to upstart.com/happyhour to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes 2 minutes and won't affect your credit. That's upstart.com/happyhour. Our thanks to Upstart for sponsoring 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour. All right, Mayo, as we mentioned at the top of the show, AirPods are not the only new thing this week. We also got today, we got like new iPhone cases and new Apple Watch bands. Like the most thing that jumps out at me is that there's the Nike bands that are black and white you can buy on their own now. And there's new colors of other bands. And then you can get the smart battery case and pink instead of black or white now. But aside from that, this week there was a new iPad announcement, which was the first of the week. So you have the first new iPad Air since the iPad Air 2 is what they're calling it, at least. They're calling it iPad Air. And then iPad Mini is new. And, you know, BuzzFeed had that report when they were the first to report the March 25th event date. And they said, you know, from what they're hearing, there would be no new AirPods or iPad Mini at the event. And they aced that one. There won't be. It's before the event. So tell me about the new iPad Air and iPad Mini.
Sure. So the Air replaces the 10.5-inch iPad Pro, which they kept in the lineup at the end of last year when they did the 2018 iPad Pros, and they just had it unchanged at $649. That model is now gone. And
is
essentially
that's because the iPad Pro, the new one, 11 inches, is $800. And so there was a $150 gap between an iPad Pro with bezels and then an iPad Pro with no bezels. And was $650 always the price of that iPad Pro, the 10.5-inch, or did it go down?
I think it used to be $699.
Okay, so it was a new price point, but the same old iPad, and then now that's gone. Yeah. Okay.
Indeed. And this iPad Air, despite reviving the branding from the iPad Air 2, which for a while it was like, we're getting rid of all the iPad Airs, and now we're back again. It's kind of like a halfway house between the $329 iPad and the previous 10.5-inch iPad Pro. It's this 10.5-inch screen. It has the same design with like the slim bezels of the 10.5-inch, not like the 2018 in any way. It's like the same chassis. It still has Touch ID, still has the headphone jack, still has Lightning. It uses the first generation Apple Pencil, despite being, you know, a new release. They're carrying on with the first gen Apple Pencil. It has the A12 chip inside, which is obviously the an upgrade from the 10.5-inch iPad Pro.
We had an A10X.
A10X.
So, and there was never an A11 anything iPad, so it's like it's an upgrade in that regard. If you had that iPad, it's like the iPhone XS compared to the iPhone 7. Is that? But except the A10X was like a, you know, iPad modified version of the iPhone 7 chip, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so this is A12, not A12X, which is what the 2018 iPad Pros use.
Yeah, and they
but for all intents and purposes, most use cases, you're probably not even going to notice a difference, really. Right. Like, because general iPad use, even, you know, the quote unquote pro uses of doing work, if you're not treading into the 3D graphics arena, the A12 and the A12X are, you know, pretty comparable, realistically. Mm-hmm. And the benchmarks seem to show that it has 3 gigs of RAM. So it looks to be the same chip as the iPhone XR, because the XS actually has 4 gigs of RAM. The XR has 3. So that's what this is using. And that is their like only new change. Although unless you, but equally, it's the first iPad non-pro to have the smart keyboard support, because has the smart connector.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's the same. The keyboard that worked with the 10.5-inch iPad Pro works with this iPad Air because it's the same size. And so it's like, if you looked at the product page for it, it said new, but it had all the old reviews for the old one. So it's literally the same hardware. It's just still compatible. And they removed, like, part of what makes an iPad a Pro iPad is that it has 4 speakers. They removed 2 of the speakers to go from the iPad Pro 10.5 to the iPad Air 10.5. So it just has 2 on the bottom. You know,
yeah, and the screen doesn't have ProMotion.
Yeah, just cost savings. But it's a laminated
Like the ProMotion is probably the biggest loss.
Yeah, it is a laminated screen though, right? So there's no like air gap like there is with the cheap 329 iPad.
Yep, it is laminated. It has True Tone. The screen brightness went from 600 to 500 for whatever reason between the 10.5-inch Pro and this one. Realistically, it's going to be a perfectly fine screen. ProMotion, the lack of that is, you know, frustrating, but you know that's why it's cheaper.
Yeah, it's like, not a Pro, right?
They didn't brand it as an iPad Air and keep the $650 price point. It's now $499. So like, there is a significant drop in price for what they're offering here. The only other thing is the camera changed. Mm-hmm. So similar to how the 2018 iPad Pros had worse cameras than the 2017 iPad Pros, this iPad Air went from like 12 megapixel to 8 megapixel. But interestingly, there's no camera bump because the camera module is smaller. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't do 4K video, which is a bit random, but it doesn't do 4K video recording. That is essentially the extent of the compromises.
Yeah.
And I think it represents a pretty solid offering for a pretty competitive price point.
Yeah, and I saw your comment that you think that the iPad Air name is fair because it is lighter than the smaller, cheaper iPad.
And thinner.
Yeah, and thinner. And so if you recall, when the iPad Air was new, the one before that was the iPad, the fourth generation iPad, where, you know, iPad got a Retina screen, and then it got a Retina screen and a Lightning port, and it was faster, and it could handle having a Retina screen. And then it got iPad Air was like a big redesign. It was the fifth like flagship iPad, and it was inspired by the iPad Mini design, where it had thinner side bezels than it had top and bottom, where they used to be even on all sides, just super thick. But iPad Air was like the flagship iPad for a while, and I think it was like it was $499, you know, when it was new. Like it was the iPad, the 9.7-inch iPad price point for the longest time. Then there was iPad Air 2, which I think was the first laminated screen where they got rid of that air gap, which looked really good. Like, it was a big difference. And it was thinner, too. Like, iPad Air 2 was thinner than the iPad Air 1. And it was dramatically, like, lighter and thinner, you know, and more portable. It was the most portable, like, iPad in that size, at least. And after Air 2 was the first Pro, you had the big 12.9 Pro. Then you had the 9.7-inch Pro, which was, like, I started feeling like that was the Air 2, it was the Air 2 replacement. Like, it was like what you call the Air 3. It was still the same, like, size and everything. It just had more speakers and, you know, new features like True Tone and pencil support. And then, you know, when they did the 10.5-inch Pro, then it's like, okay, now you're actually doing different things with the size and ProMotion. And it's like, you know, you're going like way upscale in terms of, like, you know, what it feels like. It feels like the first iPad Pro, 9.7-inch one. It was just like, this is like the new best iPad. And then once you started doing the different screen sizes, and like, especially now with the, you know, the bezel-less iPads, like, those are really fancy and they kind of like feel like premium, and their prices are going up, and they, you know, but this isn't like an iPad Air where it's like, it's the flagship. But for the price, like, it does feel like a pretty good continuation of like where they were with the Air 2, I guess, and before they started going up. You know, I feel like that the first iPad Pro was like an Air 3, really. And that this one is like, you know, if they were to continue doing that, they never went like even higher end on the iPad. So it's kind of an okay name for me. It's, you know, they haven't used the name in a while. It's the first time that there's an iPad Air that isn't the flagship iPad. But just like with the MacBook Air now, it doesn't necessarily mean like the thinnest and lightest, smallest and most portable. It just means of a certain price point that it seems to mean that it's like a price point that people are okay with, but it's not overly compromised. And that the fact that the iPad at $329 still exists is like, that's the entry level one, but not the one that we recommend for most people because of certain cuts that it makes.
Yeah, I definitely feel like they're trying to position this one as the, you know, you're a normal consumer, this is the one you should get now. Whereas the $329 one is kind of being pushed down more into the, you know, education, business, kids market more. Like, I think if you walk into an Apple store, the employees are going to push these Airs over anything else now.
Yeah,
and the you're back at the you're back at the original iPad price, right? $499 for 64 gigs.
Yeah, you get 64 gigs, or for more money, you get 256 gigabytes. So there's just two tiers, but they still come in Wi-Fi or LTE. And I think it's $130 more to just add cellular, which is like, again, the classic price. And if you add cellular to the $329 iPad, I think it's $150 more. So it costs more to add LTE to the cheap iPad than it does to the iPad Air, you know, which is like, which is like the classic formula. And then there's iPad Mini, which is like, They didn't do what we thought, which was like make the Mini the new 329 model and then make the 9.7 inch cost more or whatever the new mid-tier one is. The Mini is still a premium product. Like, it's a major upgrade from a few years ago. But they were selling the iPad Mini 4 only at the $399 mark with 128 gigabytes of storage and an old chip and no pencil support, et cetera, et cetera. Now the new Mini is $400 still with half the storage, 64 now. So it's kind of a worse deal in that regard. But it's got a way better chip to go from, what was it, A8 to A12?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it,
yeah.
Yeah. What was the A8? Was that the iPhone 6 or so?
Yes, because the 5S was A7.
Yeah, so think about going from an iPhone 6 to an iPhone XS or XR. Like, that's probably a speed difference that you're going to feel. So for the iPad Mini 4 to the iPad Mini, the new one, call it 5, that's a pretty big deal.
The A8's literally what the HomePod uses.
Right.
Yeah, it's... The Mini, like, they obviously haven't changed the external design at all. Which kind of seems to be a trend of these week's products. It's like, what can we do and push the boundaries at a roughly the same price points without actually, you know, investing in whole new chassis, which leads to some awkwardness with like the continuation of Apple Pencil 1 first generation. But I think it's pretty good. And it doesn't, before they announced these new iPads, I was kind of thinking there's no way they're going to keep the $399 iPad Mini price point as the starter, but obviously, they've doubled down on it kind of being more premium and giving it, like, the screen is True Tone supporting now, and it obviously supports Apple Pencil, and it has, you know, the latest chip, essentially. I think it kind of works. Like, even without, like, hardware changes, I feel a lot more happy recommending this iPad Mini than I thought I was going to be before. Because, like, obviously, in the four-year gap between the iPad Mini 4 and this one, kind of felt pointless, or you were kind of on the way out. But now, even though they haven't actually changed that much about the product, and in fact the storage is even halved, because you used to get 128 gig $399 iPad Mini 4 and now it's 64 for $399, I actually feel like it works, surprisingly. Like, I thought I'd be more like angry with Apple not doing more for the Mini, but I think the actual product that they show now is, you know, respectable at least.
Yeah, doing A12 and not like
A10 or something.
Yeah, an older chip. It's like, that's respectable. And these iPads are not for me. Like, the kind of buyer that I am, they're clearly not the best iPads. They're not the most expensive either. Like, that makes sense. And that, like, my biggest turnoff from both of them is that they've still got like the old-fashioned bezel style. Like, they're not full screens like the iPhone 10 and iPad Pro are now. And like, that's it. But those are perfectly functional for a lot of people. Like, it's more like a taste, you know, and like wanting like the latest, flashiest thing than anything functional in many ways. And so, you know, because I mean, it is smaller, more portable than like an iPad Pro of any size. So if you don't care about having like the full screen design and bezels are fine with you, this is a pretty good product, you know.
And the Mini's bezels are the slimmer, you know, side bezels than compared to like the 329 iPad, which is like firmly the laggard now because it has thick side bezels and obviously thick top and bottom chins and foreheads.
Yeah, that's another part of it is the iPad Air, the new iPad Air has the, you know, the iPad Pro 10.5 had thinner bezels on the sides than the iPad Pros now have all around.
Yep. And they still do.
Yeah. And
yeah, still does.
Yeah. So both cards are kind of modern still, even if it's not the best.
Yeah, I do kind of wonder how the rumor of the 10.2 inch iPad plays into this, because that's kind of what we were expecting, you know, up to this week of, oh, the spring iPad's going to be the 9.7 going to 10.2.
Yeah.
And now they've kind of flipped it on its head by not changing the 9.7, but adding back in this kind of like mid-tier, you know, mainstream option.
Mm-hmm.
Presuming that the 9.7 is the one going to 10.2, it's kind of like replacing it. I do think there's an interesting point here. They're slowly making the default screen size of the iPad bigger. Like, the iPad Mini is kind of like a separate thing, but the, you know, the normal iPad lines are all, would all now have screens bigger than 10 inches. Like, they're slowly creeping it up. Maybe that enables some stuff down the road in software, or maybe it just shows a preference that, oh, as the iPhones get bigger in screen, we need to, you know, make the iPads bigger too.
Yeah, it's true. And there was more work involved in changing the Mini screen and the fact is, like, you want to embrace how small it is. Like, if anything, you want to slim down the bezels and make it even lighter weight with the same screen size. And it's got the same resolution as a 9.7-inch iPad. It's just tighter, right? Like, they even call out that it's the highest pixels per inch of any iPad. I like the idea of thinking about the iPad Air and the iPad Mini is like the same iPad, but just different sizes. I think that works pretty well, especially in that, like, it can be more desirable to have the small iPad form size. You want speed, and it was too bad when iPad Mini was new, they were pretty good about updating it. Well, iPad Mini 1 was good. iPad Mini 2 is good. iPad Mini 3 was okay, and then it got stuck on 4. But for a while there, it felt like they had a pretty good cadence of, like, at least for one generation. I think maybe it was iPad Air and iPad Mini 3 that it was like the same iPad just in different sizes, and we're back there again. It's probably good news. Also, as a customer of the most expensive iPads and iPhones, like, seeing the old designs stick around because they're still capable, it does make the way more expensive new designs feel like they're worth their premium. Like, if you can, you know what I mean?
That's a good perspective.
Yeah, no, I'm serious though. It's like, if it's the design in many ways is like preference, like it's how flashy it feels, like it's how modern it feels. But if there's still utility in the old design and you can save money on that because it just doesn't cost as much to make that, like, you know, then it makes you my iPad feels nice. Like, it still feels as nice, and it feels like it's a pretty good value, and that it's not the only iPad out there. Like, and it also helps that there's not a big iPad market of, like, competitors, you know, that do have what's better than the old iPad. So, you know, it isn't that, like, Apple's now selling terrible iPads because they want to hit a price point when you can get way better, like, Android or otherwise tablets out there, you know. So I think
the rest of the tablet market's a bit of a joke, really.
Yeah. So these are good products. They're not for me, but, you know, for people in my family, I certainly would recommend all of these new products. Like, it kind of makes the 329 iPad, like, what does that run, the chip in it? Is that an A8? Like,
no, it's A10.
It's A10. Okay. So that's like iPhone 7 level again. It was like last year's, or like the year before last Pros that never got updated, or it took a while to get updated. It's still a pretty good iPad for the price, but it's like, now the iPad Air, there was too big of a gap between 329 iPad and iPad Pro. And using the old Pro as a middle one, while it was better in some ways, you know, this new one is better in other ways, and it's a better price. So
yeah, and it's cheaper. Like, there's a huge difference between $650 and $499. Yeah, like,
definitely. So yeah, so these are good iPads. Like my kid has the 329 iPad, because it was $429 because it was the higher storage. Because I think for kids, it's nice to have room to grow. The second version of that cheap iPad, or the cheaper iPad, and, you know, fortunately, like both the new Mini and the new Air work with the Crayon, so like that these could be like upgrade targets in the future. But my plan for that iPad for her is to last for many, many years. But it's also interesting that, like, they've managed to before you could do the Apple Pencil 1 on the 329 iPad or the Crayon, and that was like last year's cheap iPad, it was special. And then there was the new Pros, and you could do the new Pencil but no Crayon. And now you've got the Air and the Mini, and they both work with the old Pencil or the Crayon. Like, so they went out of their way to make the Pro not work with the Crayon, it seems. They don't want you using that combination.
The Pencil issue is frustrating, and would it really have, like, been problematic for Apple to, you know, design the iPad Air with a straight edge just so they could let the new Pencil charge on it? But it's fine. Like, I am not annoyed by these updates, primarily because they didn't try and, like, do one over you by putting last year's chip or something in it. Like, with an A12 in there, they feel like fine updates for the current state of the market and the current time.
Yeah.
If it takes them another 4 years to refresh the iPad Mini again, then, like, it's going to get stale.
Well, that's where I have a concern, is that right now we've seen the entry level 9.7 inch iPad get updated 2 years in a row. Well, updated one, so introduced and then updated a year later. So 2 years in a row, there was a spring something where there was a $329 iPad, and then it got better the next year. And then this year, we haven't seen it change yet. So maybe that's 10.2 iPad in some form in the future. Or maybe for this year, it's sticking around. It's not gone. Maybe for this year, like, they continue selling it unchanged and that their focus was on the iPad mini and iPad Air. And then next year, it gets some change. But, like, the fact that there's the iPad mini has an A12 in it, and so does the iPad Air now, like, which is like a whole in-between category that didn't exist before. You could argue that that means that they want this to be on the market for 2 years or 3 years, because A12 will last for a while. And that maybe next year's focus is back on the lower end. And, you know, like, can they maintain, if they're going to have an iPad mini, an iPad Air, and then two iPad Pros, can they maintain all of those annually? Or is it Pros every 18 months and then flip-flop, like, on your focus based on whatever needs you have on the lower end? Because right now it isn't like they've got an iPhone level, you know, cadence of updating, whether it's the time of year or how many months in between each one. It seems kind of experimental.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely have a different strategy between iPad and iPhone, obviously, because still on iPhone, they depend on selling last year's model at a lower price. And, like, you can still buy the iPhone 7, right? And 7 Plus. Especially now that they've got rid of the 10.5-inch iPad, every single one of these lineups is the current models. Like, they're not selling last generation of anything at the moment in terms of the iPad line.
Well, except for the cheap one, but...
Yeah, but that's not... Okay, what I mean is they're not selling, like, the cheap one... They're not selling the 2017 iPad and the 2018 at the same time. If, like, they rather than doing that, they now have, like, this iPad Air in the middle in between. So they definitely come at, like, different angles, because the iPhone lineup would look different if, you know, you had iPhone XS, iPhone XR, then iPhone SE, which they discontinued, and then, like, an iPhone Air in the you know, $600 price point, which they have shown very little interest in doing, and just sticking to, you know, two or three new iPhones a year, and that being it.
Yeah. So, I mean, on its own, it's nice to have iPad news, and this was, like, bigger than nothing. It's actually pretty interesting.
I thought it was a decent update. Like, I don't want to be, like, super downhearted about it. It was cool. And the iPad Air pricing, if you just show me the specs of the, you know, 10.5-inch iPad without promotion, essentially, and told me how much cheaper they're going to make it, I don't think I'd have guessed $499. I'd have been like, you know, $550, $599 maybe. So
that's a good point. Yeah,
I think they actually were pretty aggressive there. So
yeah, and it was in the recent Quo report where he says 10.2-inch, right? And that was one where he doesn't call it a new design, and we had that conversation about that. But just a screen size change. And then there's a Twitter account that's the name is kind of Coin, and it has been. It's an anonymous person somewhere that's got exposure to, like, what Apple's doing in terms of hardware, at least. And it had some previous tweets that were like the iPhone names, for example, how the bottom grille would be in terms of, like, the number of holes and the asymmetry with the antenna lines. So it's got – whoever is behind that account has some exposure to, like, what Apple's about to do and some very specific things that they tweet out. And they tweeted out last week that – there would be a new 10.2 iPad, but there would also be a new 10.5 iPad. And that was the first mention of a new 10.5-inch iPad. And they called it non-pro, and it was correct. So, you know, that was interesting. But we haven't seen the 10.2-inch play out yet. So without the Coin tweet, I might think maybe Quo was mistaken and 10.2 is 10.5, even though, like, that would be very weird. But based on the Coin tweet, it seems like Quo's onto something. Coin sees it too. And Coin also saw 10.5 days before it came out. So, it's curious to me, like, does Apple still want the 329 iPad to be their top seller? Because that's the tagline for it, is our most popular iPad. And surely they want the mini and the Air to kind of take over in terms of, like, what they recommend for most people. How much different and cheaper can you make a 10.2-inch iPad and a 10.5-inch iPad? Like, the difference is now there's some screen size there. There's the display quality. Like, I guess there's True Tone and lamination versus not True Tone and, like, the big air gap. You know, just overall design, like, thickness and weight and everything. But it's really, you know, you're going to have to make some pretty serious compromises to get an even bigger screen to continue to cost like less money than that. So, you know, maybe they also play with storage. Like it continues to be 32 gigabytes for storage, not 64. So,
or maybe they just push the price up and they're like, you know, we're going to 350 now.
Yeah, which wouldn't be a big jump. But yeah, so I guess we'll see what happens there. But it was a big week for the iPad. Like there was one day this week on the Apple homepage where they took all the iPhones off the grid, and it was just iPads, like the two iPads for the day. This week, 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by our friends at Hyper, a company behind some of our favorite USB-C hubs, chargers, battery packs, and other high-quality accessories for Apple devices. This month, we've teamed up with Hyper for our 9to5 Mac Deal of the Month, where we'll feature a great deal on only quality accessories for Apple devices. For March, get 50% off Hyper's combo, wireless charger, USB-C hub, and its other wireless chargers for your car and home. Hyper has three unique Qi wireless chargers. One of the most unique wireless charger options in the lineup is the HyperDrive 7.5-watt wireless charger stand with a built-in USB-C hub featuring 4K HDMI at 30 Hz, Gigabit Ethernet, three USB-A 3.0 5 gigabits per second ports, SD micro, and USB-C with 49-watt power delivery. It also has a less expensive option without the built-in USB-C hub, as well as the HyperDrive 7.5-watt wireless charger for the car with an included air vent and compatibility with other interchangeable mounts. Hyper makes some of the most versatile and well-designed accessories for Macs and iPads, iPhones, and more. And we love having Hyper support the podcast. So head to the show notes to get 50% off Hyper's combo, wireless charger, USB-C hub, and its other wireless chargers for your car and home. Just use promo code 9to5wireless at checkout. Again, that's promo code 9to5wireless at checkout. Our thanks to Hyper for sponsoring 9to5 Mac Happy Hour. All right, Mayo, this week we got something that we did not get last year, which are update to the iMac line. I think that's the best I can say about it is that last year Apple released no new iMacs. They had impressive new iMacs in July or June 2017. That was when they introduced USB-C Thunderbolt 3 ports to the iMac. And you kept USB-A, but then they didn't touch those for a year and a half, but or so. And now,
yeah, and obviously they did the iMac Pro in between.
Yeah, they did the iMac Pro in between. So, and then the Mac Mini eventually. Now we've got new iMacs, but the thing is like, it's not a dramatic update. It's kind of curious, like, why these didn't come sooner, like, sometime last year, I guess. I don't know. Maybe they just wanted to put the attention on the Mac Mini and I don't know, but we have new iMacs there. I guess the best way to describe these are you've got 4 and 6 core versions of the 4K iMac, the 21.5-inch model, and then 6 and 8 core versions of the 5K iMac. And are those jumps in cores? Like you can get more cores now in screen size, or is it the same?
Yeah, you used to max out at 6 cores, and now you can max out at 8 cores.
Yeah, and does that follow the MacBook Pro too?
Like,
what's the? I know the
MacBook Pro maxed out at 6. Right?
Yeah, and it used to be dual core and quad core, and then they did 6 and 8.
Yeah,
and so there was parity between MacBook Pro and iMac, and now it's once again like you expect more power from a desktop, so now you can get more power from the iMac. So like these are a speed boost by all means, but there's no new design. You can still buy $1,000+ iMacs with non-Retina screens and spinning hard drives.
Yeah, the $1,099 iMac was completely unchanged. Mm-hmm. So you get the 7th generation processor, you get 8 gigs of RAM, and you get a 1 terabyte hard drive. Not Fusion, just normal hard drive.
Yeah.
And it's 1920 by 1080. And
that's
they didn't
not
change
a cheap
that at
computer,
all.
But it's not great either.
It's definitely not great.
Yeah.
And then they upgraded the 4Ks to quad core and 6 core. They're the $1,299 and $1,499 configurations. And then on the 27, it's 6, 6, and 6. You don't even get the 8 core unless you pay extra.
Mm.
So all of the they didn't change the prices. Like it's still $1,799, $1,999, $1,299.
They're just like built to order.
Yeah, but the 8-core, if you want the 8-core A9 option, you have to pay extra.
And is the graphics card, like, you, I guess, now that, what, do they have better graphics or new graphics
options? Only when you buy them, though. Only when you configure them. Like, okay. The graphics didn't change. Mm. They just now have an option to get Radeon Pro Vega graphics. Mm. So it's...
And
like, when you summarize it like that, it, you know, it feels kind of rubbish.
It feels like a pretty good update for last year.
Yeah.
Like last July when the MacBooks got updated. What surprised me, like there's no new design at all. Like, it's the same, like, even display type, it's the same. And there was that one Ming-Chi Kuo rumor last July or June where he said, iMacs with display improvements of some type, right? And then it seems correct. To be like that came to the MacBook Pro in the form of True Tone. Which is still only on the Mac line, is only on the MacBook Pro, unless you connect a MacBook Pro to another display, then it spills over. So no True Tone, which surprises me sort of, because like it isn't that you're tying True Tone to Pro products, because we've seen in the iPad line non-Pro iPads get True Tone, and the iPhone line all iPhones get True Tone from iPhone 8 and later, including the 10R. But on the iPad, on the iMac line, or on the Mac line, only the MacBook Pro has True Tone, and not the new iMac, which to me, like, big display, match the room temp, the color temperature of the room, you know.
Yeah, and it's such a cheap component, like,
yeah.
It's just an RGB color sensor. It's nothing, you know. It's nothing super expensive. It's not like you're asking for Face ID in it, for instance.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and then the overall casing, like, it's the same bezel style, which is, like, you know, we'll discuss that in a moment. But it's only available in silver, and so if you just want, I would have guessed that maybe they'd promote this as new by making it also silver. Like, before, you could only get silver or space gray. You only get space gray on a Mac Pro, and that was $5,000 plus. And, like, the color doesn't really affect the performance, we know. But, you know, then bring that space gray option to the new iMacs. And so they're faster iMacs, and you can also, now you can get space gray without spending $5,000 on an iMac Pro. Well, they didn't do that. It's still only silver, even though the Mac Mini is only sold in space gray from $800 plus. The MacBook Air, MacBook, and MacBook Pro all come in space gray, plus other colors.
All of the iPads, obviously.
All of the, it's like default. But the iMac, you can only get it in silver. Like, they're, for whatever reason, maybe it's to make the iMac Pro, like, more distinctive still. But I think that the specs alone do that. That's my biggest thing. They didn't play with color here and just, like, now we do space gray. Like, even if it's not the only option, like, it's an option. But they didn't do that. It's only in silver. And then, of course, like, you've got an issue with the overall design. As an iMac Pro customer, it's almost like I mentioned earlier, like, the new iPads with old designs make my iPad Pro feel nicer to me. The fact that I've got an iMac Pro purchased last year makes, you know, now the design hasn't changed, I feel like, oh, I've still got the current design, even if current means dated. Tell me how you feel about the new iMacs and their design.
Look, I don't ask for change every single year, and I'm not like, oh, it has to look different for it to be an important update. Like we just said, the iPad updates are perfectly acceptable, right? They're not revolutionary, but they're perfectly fine and iterative. They gave them the latest chips. Bob's your uncle. The iMac, though, it has been so long that we've been waiting for design change. This iMac design chassis is identical to the one that shipped in late 2012, and the late 2012 design change was the same as the 2010 iMac, except that they made the side bezel, the side edge, taper down to 5 millimeters. As was discussed in 2012, that effectively has no impact on day-to-day use, because who looks at the iMac from the side, right?
It looks nice in product placements and, like, in offices, but, like, I don't see the side of my iMac, like, the way that my office is arranged, and so it's just the face-on view is, like...
Right. I have a quote-unquote old 2010 iMac that was actually my first Mac, right? And it just happens to be in... It used to be used for the family. At the moment, it just happens to be out here. And if I look at it head-on, it's identical to the 21.5-inch iMac that Apple sells in 2019.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like... Come on. The bezels are so big. They are ginormous. You still have the chin, and then you have 3-centimeter black glass bezel all around it as well. The distance from the bottom of the iMac to the start of the screen is 9 centimeters if you count up the chin.
Like it, to me, if it was like perfectly flat or like way less flat or like way more flat than it actually is, like it's pretty bulbous right now, then that bottom chin would be like, oh, well, that's where the computer part of it is. But
yeah.
It's not the case. It's like, it's got a big chin and all this other stuff.
Yeah, if it was 5 millimeters flush, right, I could understand it, but it's not. It still bulges out like an old CRT, really. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I'd perfectly prefer if it was thicker on the edge so they could minimize the chin and the bezel size. Like, I would take that trade-off any day of the week. Yeah. And even if they just got rid of the chin and so it was just black glass and, they slimmed the chin away, that would still be an improvement, right? But, like, the iMac design, it looked good in 2010. I feel like by now it is really, really showing its age.
I feel like it's almost like a case of, like, with the iPads where there's just not – it's like, what is the PC market now? What is the desktop market even smaller? And there are all-in-one computers like the iMac, but they're like plasticky and cheap, and they're not way better. And that, like, in a bubble, the iMac design is nice. Like, old Apple designs are nice. They just also aren't current. And it feels like the way that you describe, the SE is discontinued now. It's like clearanced out in the US market. It's a nice design for what it is and like the price point, but like the iMac, this isn't like the iMac SE or, iMac Air or iMac Mini. Like this is old. This is an old design and it's the best you can get no matter how much you pay.
Yeah.
And I like your argument that like the iMac Pro is like showing off how much power you can put in this casing.
Yeah. Without changing the case, they improved the power output, the throughput, the workstation performance so much for the iMac Pro, with like the 18-core CPU, for instance.
And it's totally redesigned inside. Like it's a totally different machine inside, the same casing outside, except for the color.
Yeah, but that shows that they have room to play with the same casing size. So why do they not do the opposite with the consumer level iMacs and use that leeway to make it thinner, lighter, and more sleek? Like, It boggles my mind. It really does. Like, I just think they look... I can't look at an iMac and say that looks good anymore. It just... The bezels are just so big. They are, like, ginormous. Are we going to have this for another 2 years? They're not going to update the iMac again for another 2 years? And then maybe in 2021... we'll have a different iMac design.
Yeah, I mean, you could guess that the design, like the Mac design team, they didn't redesign the Mac Mini. They just gave it a new color, which is nice. That was generous compared to the iMac. But you could say, well, they're fully focused on inventing reinventing the Mac Pro, and then designing the display that will go along with it, and that will be a new design. And then, like maybe eventually, that whatever the display design has, a version of that will filter down to the iMac. Like maybe, not even guaranteed.
Yeah. And even going beyond the design of the screen, right, we are still talking about a product that ships, spinning hard drives in its base model, and in its slightly higher models, it ships fusion drives, which are, like 20 gig SSDs combined with hard drive storage. Mm-hmm. To get SSDs, you have to build to order them. Like, it really feels like a last decade product. Like,
yeah,
why do we not have an iMac here that is SSD only?
With modern usage, even Fusion Drive, because I had a Fusion Drive iMac, is a major bottleneck. Like you can upgrade the RAM, you can upgrade the processor, or you can have a fast processor, but you'll hit some serious speed bumps with a Fusion Drive. And I can't imagine using just a basic hard drive. Don't waste your money is what I would say.
And people keep going, oh, it's because of pricing. They need to get the price points low. Right. You can have non-PCI Express SSDs that are far cheaper, right, and just ship those instead. And they'd still be like 3 times as fast as the hard drives are. Like, and then that ties into the whole T2 thing, right? Like, Apple keeps pushing the whole, we're going to put this security chip into every single product and it can control this other stuff too. And it can result in, 2.5 gigabyte read-write speeds on SSDs. But here's the iMac, and there's no T2 anywhere to be seen.
Yeah, the fact that the T2 – so the T2 originated on the iMac Pro last year. Or, it was shown off in June 2017 and then released in December. So it was effectively like last year's iMac. It's like that's the best we can do. That's like the state-of-the-art architecture for a computer. And then it made it to the MacBook Pro – and it made it to the MacBook Air. And the MacBook Air being like – it's not a cheap computer, but it's like the – it's aside from the old MacBook Air, I think it is like the entry-level MacBook that you can buy, right? So if they can fit T2 into the MacBook Air, then the fact that the potentially way more expensive iMac doesn't have it is kind of wild. Like, it just doesn't fit. It's out of order. It's out of sync. And, you know, the only difference is, like you can buy iMacs with SSDs. Those should come with T2. Like, even though it'd be different, let some have it, some don't. Those, at least, you think should. Like, you're willing to spend money on an iMac. You don't need a $5,000 iMac, but you want to spend a lot on an iMac. You can spend $4,000 on an iMac. You don't get T2 because some iMacs don't have solid-state drives. So no iMacs get T2. That's weird.
Yeah, like, they could at least have one model that is SSD-only options and integrates the T2 chip into it.
Yeah, it's really odd that they're not doing that yet.
And yes, it would require some, you know, redundant engineering, right? That wouldn't be applicable to every single model in the lineup, but...
So does having two screen sizes, because they're just very different inside, too.
Like, yeah, and does Apple really want to still be supporting Fusion drives? Like, I would almost prefer it if they just cut the storage and just did 256 gig SSDs and rather than having Fusion drives in the
good,
line,
it's
right?
Good enough for the MacBook Air, MacBook Pro, like, in notebooks is okay. And so on desktops, like, it's actually much easier to connect external storage because you can reliably always leave it there and use one of your mini ports on the back. Like, you've got really fast Thunderbolt 3 ports and you've got mini USB-A ports that are fast, fast enough. It's like, and you're not going to move your desktop around. So you can kind of rely more on external storage. Like, if you don't mind the sound of the drive spinning, for reasonable prices. Like, that's what I do with my photo library. It's on an external Thunderbolt 3 drive, and it's noisy, and I hate the sound of it because, like, everything else is silent on my iMac. But I can't fit my photo library locally on the iMac, so I use that. And that would never work on a MacBook because it'd be moving around all the time, and, like, I could only launch my photo library when I'm plugged in. It wouldn't work. So I think it'd actually be, like, closer to acceptable to have, like, low storage levels of iMac, and then you rely on external storage, or you pay more for internal storage. Like, that'd be closer to ideal than what the current is.
Yeah, or maybe like the 21.5-inch keep the hard drives, and then the 27s have SSDs in them, for instance.
Yeah.
And T2.
Yeah, we're definitely
like, that'd be acceptable, because as it stands, all of the configurations that they sell as, like, good, better, best, right, not the build-to-order, mm-hmm. they're philosophically last-decade design, and they're last-decade internal setup, right? Like, spinning hard drives and no security chip. It just feels... Everything feels like old.
And, like, discussing this on Twitter, there were a lot of people who were very strongly okay with this design not changing. Like, why change what works? But we don't apply that really to iPads and iPhones. Like, even if we continue to use old designs in certain tiers of products, there's also a state-of-the-art product that's much better than that. You know, iPhones and iPads are just like, it's just like a decade ahead of, like, the current iMac design. Even the notebooks get better and better every year, or, you know, every few years, and get redesigned. But the iMac, it's not doing it. Like,
Look at the proportion of bezel on the cheapest 329 iPad compared to a 21.5-inch iMac. Like, it's worlds apart.
And
it
even,
just
even, you know, change for the sake of change, whatever. But also, like, I feel strongly about, if you're going to spend over $1,000 on a premium PC, which is, you know, the base model iMac, even non-Retina spinning hard drive, it's expensive. It's a premium personal computer compared to, like, a $300 all-in-one computer, you know, that runs Windows.
Like, yeah, and all the Windows PCs have touchscreens, which, again, the iMac doesn't have.
Yeah, yeah. So I wouldn't recommend spending premium money on non-premium designs, like, and that's kind of what you're doing. So even if it was, like, iterationally changing, like, every few years, they've just not done it. Like, the MacBook line, you know, look at the 2012 Retina MacBook and then the 2016 2012 MacBook Pro. Like, it was way different than the model before that. It was, what, 08? And then 2016, and now it's like there's different versions of that design and other products in the MacBook line. And
it sounds like we're about to hit another, you know, MacBook Pro redesign.
Yeah. All the while, the iMac is, like, the least changed.
The stalwart.
Yeah. It almost matches, like, the market size of it, which is understandable. But also, like, Apple, there are some things that Apple can do because this part of the company is successful. This other part can benefit. It can, you know, enjoy the success too, you know. So, again, selfishly, I feel good that my iMac Pro doesn't look dated now because there's something better out in the form of like a consumer iMac that like looks way nicer and, you know, has T2 chip. Like none of that happened. It's just my iMac Pro looks as good, if not better, than the new iMacs, and it's got a T2 chip, you know. And the fact is, like, you've got to really spec up an iMac to get close to an iMac Pro, which just SSD alone, like, is what you expect to see from Mac notebooks. Like, you know, it's they'll let the iMac be way worse than, like, any Mac notebook that you can buy, mm-hmm. even the old MacBook Air, you know. Like, the old MacBook Air is probably a better computer than – yeah, I'd say it definitely is. Like, it's not a retina screen, but neither is the – lowest in 21.5-inch iMac. So it's like...
Yeah, because when we were hearing the rumors, obviously, for the iMac just being, you know, relatively boring spec bunk, I was obviously prepared for it not to be a new design.
Yeah. But I thought even, like, iMac Pro specs come, you know, they've already spilled to the MacBook line with MacBook Pro, MacBook Air, and then Mac Mini, right? And so they come to the iMac too. And there'll be a period where the iMac and the iMac Pro have similar features for different prices, you know.
Yeah, and they even under-delivered, I think, on spec bumping it, because, you know, all you get on the base, you know, the normal prices are faster processors, right? Mm-hmm. And not on the 1099 one has no change at all. There's no change to, like, RAM or storage or anything else, or even True Tone, you know, even True Tone technology. Like,
yeah.
The graphics option is nice, but that's an, you know, additional add-on purchase, so you can't really count it as, like, the base model upgrade. It just felt like a very, very minor change after 2 years between another relatively minor change. At least they added USB-C on that one. And then before that, like, you can go back in history and you quickly spiral back to, you know, 2012. And if you want to argue about the 5mm gap not being relevant, then you're back to, like, 2010. So, yeah, the iMac has definitely lasted too long in its current form. And I'm sure they will have a very pretty, you know, Face ID super sleek version in development, but that's not the one that is on the market today for any price.
Yeah, yeah. I will say credit to Mark Gurman for both the iPad and the iMac story. It wasn't a Bloomberg story, but he tweeted over the weekend something coy, which is kind of you know, kicking off like our discussion we had with him last week on the show, which was like, I think I mentioned to him, if Apple's going to do a hardware-only event on March 25th or software-only event on March 25th with services, they've got to have great confidence in that the magazine service has partners and that the video service is like it worth the attention. You know, like if it's a whole 2 hours or hour and a half, like it must be pretty good or they must be confident in it. And over the week, and also not want to share attention with other things. And over the weekend, he tweeted out something like, wouldn't it show how much Apple thinks that the services they're introducing are important? Like they want to focus on that if they released new iPads and iMacs in press releases this week. And sure enough, it happened. Like there were all these rumors of new products, but like not necessarily iMac strongly. And then, you know, mm-hmm. over the weekend he called it. He saw it in advance, I suppose.
Yeah, and I don't think really anyone was expecting three hardware announcements this week, let alone we might even have more. So
yeah, it was
they're definitely going case scenario, you know, to the barrel.
Yeah, they're certainly like there was you know, at the iPhone XS event, I think there might have been like at the end, you know, here we go, we're gonna do something more. And it's like, oh, is it gonna be the new AirPods or maybe AirPower? And it was a music guest, you know. That you don't want to have an event where there is no hardware at all, even if it's coming out the next week. So definitely like smart to put it all before the event. And this rhythm that they're doing where it's one thing a day helps spread the news out. Like, and it's kind of like, it feels like, you know, they're building up to something, which,
yeah,
you know, could just be, and now the grand finale at Showtime, our new services that we're the most excited about. You know, but so far we've received iPads on Monday, iMacs on Tuesday, which also there were lowered prices for upgraded storage options in MacBook Air and MacBook Pro, right? And I think we saw an anonymous tweet that said that was supplier related. Like Apple got better deals on the storage options, so they passed along to the customer. But those aren't the base models. Those are just like what you can get. More storage for less price now if you're upgrading.
Oh, and you can get a 256 gigabyte RAM option on the iMac Pro.
Yeah, which means iJustine's $18,000 iMac Pro isn't the top end anymore.
Because the RAM upgrade alone is $5,200.
Yeah, so the RAM upgrade alone costs more than the base iMac Pro does. So. Which, if the iMac Pro now supports 256 gigabytes of RAM, then the Mac Pro may be able to handle more than that. 512 gigabytes of RAM? Like, we're talking... talking a lot of RAM now.
And how much numbers. My laptop that I use day to day has a 256 gigabyte hard drive.
Hard drive, right. Like, not just RAM. What do you have, like 16 gigabytes of RAM? So
yeah, 16 RAM.
Yeah. So it has been an eventful week. And then this, you know, I guess what we'll say is at this point in recording, like if there's something more on Thursday and Friday, we'll come back and talk about it, you know, at least for the Thursday segment. And then if Air Power comes out, like some people are very optimistic that Air Power will be on Thursday. If so, you'll hear about that in a moment. If not, you know,
I'm crying.
Yeah. If Air Power isn't like on a Friday, which again feels to me optimistic, honestly, but maybe
it does not seem assert, right? Like, I think few people are hyping up too much. Like, Apple's going to do a whole week of stuff and it's going to be really cool, but yeah. I would not. I think maybe what I'm kind of like priming myself for is a press release that says Air Power will be available in April, at the end of April, pre-order now or something. Like not a shipping next week thing in my head. I'm like, at least they're going to do a press. Because I think it's kind of weird now for them to have the AirPods wireless charging case out in the world and no kind of comment or status update on the Air Power situation. Sure, so yeah. I'm kind of hoping that at the bare minimum, it would be some press release acknowledging its existence.
Yeah. But what we're planning is that if there's something new on Thursday morning, you know, I'll edit the show on Thursday. So we'll come back and we'll do a short segment on that. You'll hear it in a moment if there is something. If not, there's nothing more to talk about. And then if there's, you know, something on Friday that's as big as Air Power, then we'll come back for, you know, a short, maybe 20-minute chat about it and put it in the feed. But just like Apple's planning, they want all this stuff out to be before the event. Next week, we'll be able to talk about the event, and that's it. You know, not have all this stuff, you know, left over and not able to discuss it in fair time. So, you know, what is left? Air Power, maybe. iPod Touch seems like a big one. Like, maybe that people, a lot of people guess that'd be on Wednesday. And they did it AirPods on Wednesday. So. Maybe Thursday that by touch, maybe that doesn't happen. Then maybe they're done for the week. One thing is that they had the homepage dedicated to iPads and then iPad plus iMacs. And now it's like back to normal with iPhones, iPads, iMacs, AirPods, et cetera. So we'll see what happens there. But, is there anything else you expect that we could see this week that you want to guess about or how do you feel?
The only thing that is completely more in the services side that we've heard very, very vague rumblings about is some update to the iCloud platform in terms of security. And I know it sounds very boring, but there is... Do you remember like a few months ago, there was that thing about, oh, why doesn't Apple let you do end-to-end encryption of your iCloud backup, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
And you have to... your backup to iCloud is encrypted, but Apple has the keys so they can decrypt it.
Tim Cook said that they're going to look at that, right?
Tim Cook said he was going to look at it, and... In February, the EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, mm-hmm. Started a big campaign about let customers control their keys.
Yeah, and their pitch was like, why don't you finally, it was some clever phrasing, and they had one item for every company, and their item for Apple was related to this.
Yeah, end-to-end encryption. They want end-to-end encryption iCloud backups. And we had one anonymous tip that was out of the blue that said there will be iCloud security improvements coming in April. And although that is technically a service, that sounds far too dry for the Showtime event. So maybe that fills out the week now, and it would be a downer compared to our Air Power. But
the end-to-end encryption too, like for backups, is you know, in all these cases where Apple does work with law enforcement because it's possible to, like they can unlock the iPhone on device, but if you've got a backup in the cloud, they can't access that, right? Like that there's methods to do that. Like they can restore from their backup to a device.
Yeah, because the backup's stored encrypted, but the decryption key is also stored on Apple servers. Mm-hmm. So law enforcement can subpoena the decryption key as well. Mm-hmm. Unlike a truly end-to-end service where the encryption keys are stored on your own device and not stored in the cloud.
Yeah. Backing up on from the iPhone to a computer that also has an encrypted hard drive would be more secure today than backing up to iCloud for convenience. And this change might be that it's equivalent. It's encrypted in both cases.
Yeah, and the downside, of course, is that if you forget your password, you can't decrypt the backup, so you're actually screwed.
Yeah,
that is currently why Apple does not do end-to-end encryption of the backups, because too many people forget their passwords. But I believe they are going to introduce it, whether it's now or later in the year, as an option that you can turn on for extra security.
Just like on backing up through iTunes to a computer, you can pick, I think by default, it's not encrypted, but you can create a password just for the backup. And then there's other benefits, like your passwords within apps get saved, and it's nice. So okay, we'll look out for that. I want to end this week by talking about Apple Watch and some fitness stuff. So I mentioned last week or so that I had the first chance to test out fall detection while roller skating at my daughter's birthday party, and it worked like a dream. This week, just by chance, I was in a situation where I was just taking it out for a walk and just kind of casually and intentionally didn't start a workout, because it was like, I'm going to walk to workout. It was like, I'm going to walk to get from point A to point B. And after 10 minutes, the automatic workout detection kicked in, where it says, are you taking it after a walk? And do you want to start a session? And it was the first time since watchOS 5 was out that I've intentionally done this. Because the idea is, like, if I'm actually working out, I don't want to miss any data at all. I want full credit for the whole thing. But this was just casual. And so I said yes. And it was neat to see. You get the 10 minutes seems to be like the threshold that it looks for. It's like the continuous activity over 10 minutes. So it is an accidental one, and you know, you've taken a walk, but it's not really a session. And it has all the data from the 10 minutes prior, except for location, because it wasn't precisely tracking your location that whole time. And then heart rate is like the 10 minute interval too. It isn't every second or whatever it ends up being for a workout. But I found the feature to work really well. I ended up taking like three different walks that day, from like long to, you know, so it's like a mile and a half or so each way. And each time it worked quite well. Now I had used automatic workout detection on the Apple Watch, to end workouts, like the workout, cause they're just reminders. They aren't like start and stop automatically, but like do the elliptical at the gym, get in the car. And then when I sit down at the wheel, it's like, oh, you've stopped a workout. You want to end it? And you know, that's like, that's a pretty good reminder. But I hadn't done it to start workouts, because it is a little bit limited, and I don't tend to forget when I start a workout. And in this case, it was just casual. So, you know, I wouldn't have, I mean, you're going to get the credit for the exercise ring anyway, based on just your activity. And then move goal calories too. So, but you know, if it asks you, then I thought, why not? I'll hit go, and it really worked well. So I was happy with that.
I wonder actually on this is that, obviously, in WatchOS 5, they did it where you have, it's just like popping up with alerts and you have to start and stop it confirming it. What Fitbit do is they will actually list your workouts automatically. And so maybe in WatchOS 5, Apple's kind of like training the algorithm. And then if there's enough like hits and minimizing false positives, then in like WatchOS 6, they'll let you have an option where it could just do it automatically, so you never even get told that it's happening.
Yeah, it would at least be a parody with what they're doing, because it isn't quite the same. But I found it to work well for what it was. And again, it's limited to certain exercises too, because it's got to be able to determine what you're doing and, you know, guess at that. But it was kind of neat. Like 2 weeks in a row, there were features that were new to this watch hardware, this watch software, and the finally kind of found a use for. You know, I saw it's out in the wild at least. I think I want to mention is, I mentioned on the show a while back that I was kind of irritated with Nike Run Club for run tracking on the Apple Watch. And, you know, part of it is that the Apple Watch, the workout app, has features that Nike Run Club doesn't have, like, pace alerts and showing cadence and, the detail, location detail in the activity app when you look at a workout pass. Nike Run Club has most of the data, but it doesn't pass along the map, even though you can see it in Nike's app. And then even something as simple as like being able to swipe over on the workout app screen while you're in a session and control playback controls like play pause and volume. Any app now can, at first you could only do it on the workout app, and then with WatchOS 5, any app can add it, but Nike hasn't bothered to add that play control card. You know, they could, and they sell a Nike watch.
Yeah, you mean the Apple-endorsed Nike app?
Designed by Apple and runners. I had growing pains with the Nike Run Club app. I think I logged like 600 miles total, and then I was like, okay, I'm through with the NRC app. Unless it were like way better. There are still features about it that I like, but listeners turned me on to an app called Tempo for logging, like how automatically, like using the Apple Workout app on the watch, but then like having logs automatically of how many miles you ran this week, this month, this year, etc. And I downloaded it like and bought like the I think the pro subscription for pro version, like to unlock all the features and support the app a while ago. But I hadn't totally dived into it until this week, and I gotta say, like, one thing that motivates me with the Apple Watch and fitness is like seeing data from what I'm already doing, and the Tempo app for run tracking, and you can also use it for walks too, but it's kind of a setting that you change to say, do you want this pace to be tracked or not? But for runs, like, the data that it has that you can just like tap around and look at so many different charts and like, you know, ways to measure what you're doing. And if you've got no data on a calendar, it's like, I need to fill this out, like almost like activity rings. I need to fill this calendar out with data. I found it to be very motivating. So my endorsement to Tempo. The only thing that Nike Run Club, aside from its own social network, can't do or does that Tempo can't and that Watch App hasn't quite done yet, when I, you know, run a marathon, it'll have, or a half marathon in my case, it'll have that pace is like the fastest half marathon. And if I run the next one faster, then it knows that was the fastest half marathon. And it has the date, and it's like a whole page for your achievements, including your fastest, 1 mile, 1K, 5K, 10K, half marathon, and the marathon if you do one. And I've not seen anything, including Tempo, that can just look at a run you did on the watch with the workout app and say, okay, this was all the data from that. You know, you've got your splits, everything, but this is your fastest 5K ever. And I feel like it's probably possible, like if Nike Run Club can do it, even with just like your iPhone as the app, then someone could do it from the watch with the data.
Yeah, you get full access to the HealthKit database, so you could definitely just check all the workouts that have ever been done and find out like the records and stuff. I think it's definitely possible.
Yeah. So I've not seen it there, but now that I'm looking at the Tempo app, like it's on my home screen now as the replacement for Nike Run Club, and then I log runs with Apple's Workout app. I kind of want to get involved with the developer now and say, like, here, I've got this feedback. And someone, I think it was probably that someone recommended it to me from the show and then, or through Twitter, and then the developer might have saw it too. And so, I'm not familiar with the developer, like communication wise, but the app is good enough that I think like a few other things, like the ability to, you know, do icon sets where you have different colors of the icon would be great. Obviously dark mode in the future, especially if it's part of iOS. But then that one thing where you just copy what Nike Run Club did and say, here's your fastest 1K, 5K, all that would be just, I would not have second thoughts about not using Nike Run Club anymore. That's the only thing I miss. My endorsement to Tempo app. Go check it out. If you run, even if you walk, you can change it to pick up walking paces too. And it's just neat to see all the data in a chart and catalog. Like the alternative, I guess, is like, you know, people that aren't in the tech as much would take a journal and like, you know, journal this out like in a notebook as, you know, historically, like, yeah. But I love the idea of every run I ever take of significance is logged automatically and digitally, it's reading what the health kit is seeing, so it isn't like it's stuck in this app on its own either. So it's great. So Tempo, check it out if you want to. And if you know the developer, mention the thing about historical like records of running, because I really care about that as a, you know, way to track what I'm doing. And it'd be great to see. Well, that's the Happy Hour podcast for this week. We'll be back next week, and it'll be all about the event, so we'll see what happens there. And again, if there's something on Friday, we'll come back, and if it's air power level, we'll probably come back and do a conversation about that and put it in the feed. Until then, we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.